It's a great pleasure to have Father Tom Tsakalakis on the show with me today. He's here to talk about the story of Christ raising Lazarus from a really unique perspective. Hi, Father Tom.
Hi, Father Chris. It's a blessing to hear your voice.
The same, the same. Father, let's talk about Lazarus, because people have a lot of different opinions about actually what happened. Talk with us about this piece of the story that's most striking to you.
Well, let me tell you, this story really impacted me, and maybe some other time we can talk about this group we have, this give-back group here that we have that deals with people with addictions, with families and family members. And when I realized the story of Lazarus, I realized that this is not just about a man who's been dead, but it's about our own death in a way, with whatever addictions we have, whether it's anxiety, fear, worries, shame, pride. So here's the story. So Jesus comes into Bethany. I don't know, Father, you're better than I am. If there's 10 people there, 1,000 people there. So he goes in there, and he says the most insane thing to these people, and he says, you know, I want you to roll the stone away. And in the icon, he's got his hand pointed to Lazarus. He's got his hand pointed to the people, and, you know, the people, they're turning their face, and they're holding their nose, and they're saying, gee, you know, this is nuts. You got to be nuts, Lord. He's dead. He stinks. There's no reason to do this.
He's been dead for a few days, right?
He's been dead for 4 days,
right,
and
exactly.
I think he says earlier, I could have gone earlier, but I just approve.
Right.
I think it's been there 4 days, and I think the story for me is it impacts me, because we talk about a dead man, but he's really talking about you and me. So he goes and asks the community, you know, roll the stone away, and finally, did one person start it? Did another person start rolling the stone away? Because the excuse was, it's too heavy, I can't do it, maybe somebody else can, he's dead. And I thought, for us, you know, it's the same thing when we see people in our community or people around us, you know, roll the stone away from Father Chris. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the community, roll the stone away from people around us, and we have this attitude like, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a priest, too much, they're dead, they stink, why bother? But anyway, in this community, Father, they decided they'd accept the invitation. And the fascinating thing to me is when you think about healing, because this whole Bible verse for me is about healing, and that's what's happening as he steps into Jerusalem, and as he walks towards Golgotha, and he takes the cross, he's going to go and duke it out with the evil one, and he's going to resurrect us and trample death upon death. So the second question he asked, so the first question, they accept. They roll the stone away. The second command was, he asks Lazarus to do what? He asks him to come out. So what I learned in my work with addicts and with not just with drugs and heroin and alcohol and sex and pornography, once that's uncovered with at least one person, because the devil wants to keep things secret, once it's uncovered with one person, the community gets involved and rolls a stone away from that barrier that keeps life from being ignited, that keeps God from us, he says to Lazarus, come out. And I think a lot of us, we try to help one another when a person has not decided that they want to come out, they want to stop the behavior, they want to move forward. Lazarus has to make a decision. You and I have to make a decision to come towards Christ. And it's like a story that AA folks use. There's three frogs on a lily pad, one frog on each lily pad. One frog decides to jump in. How many frogs are left on the lily pad?
Two.
The answer is three. And how could it be three? Three frogs on lily pads, separate lily pads. One decides to jump in.
Okay.
And there's three left.
Three left, okay.
The reality is, the one that decided to jump in never did. And how many of us make resolutions on New Year's, make resolutions for when we start fasting, resolutions that change our hearts? And you know, the Lord knows people have to decide to follow him. So this scripture reading for me is so powerful, because there's a personal invitation. There's an altar call for Lazarus. There's an altar call for you. There's an altar call for me. The last thing he asks is for the community to unbind him. He didn't unbind him. He didn't go in the tomb. He asked the community to do the work, and he asked Lazarus to come out.
So it shows that the community is involved in the miracle. Christ performs the miracle, but he involves the community. Is that what you're saying?
They're co-workers.
Co-workers in it. Okay.
Yes. 'Cause he unrolled his own tomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
you know, he came out of the tomb his own. I mean, but he's asking the community, as long as we have the skin, he asks us to get involved.
And it's interesting, too, that here we don't have the interaction with the angels that, look, no. He's in the tomb. It's going to smell now. That is not even discussed here. But yet in this one with Lazarus, we have that Greek word ozi. You know, there's a smell there. And that smell is something that, as you said, does reflect our own sinfulness. And that coming out and that releasing of the bonds, releasing of the bandages, then frees him to live. But the people help him to do that, right?
People help him to do that. And okay. I'm thinking, how does that work in our day and age in our own churches? And I think, you know, many times we're afraid because we expect that the priest to go in the tomb, the priest to do the work. Mm-hmm. And then the community is not involved at all in the healing process because we've not been trained that we can be co-workers with Christ mm-hmm. in a okay. healing ministry. And I see it so clearly in the group that we've had for 5 years that it's so essential, because part of the healing is telling one another our stories, and stories beget stories. And when we tell stories in the light and we don't keep secrets, the world opens up to us. So part of these things I really gathered was reading the Old Testament and realizing there's 5 things that happened in your life, in my life, in everyone's life. And if I can share that in 2 minutes. If we are created in God's image, as the church really believes, and there's this divine, beautiful breath of God in our soul that unites us with our head and our heart, and in the garden there's a disconnect between the head and the heart. There's 5 things that happen in the garden when they partake of the fruit. And there's the 5 things that keeps us in the tomb. The first thing is when God says, after he partook of the apple, or whatever the sin was, God says, "Where are you, Adam?" And it says in the scriptures, he became afraid. So the first thing that starts anyone in any addictive process, whether it's severe like heroin or drugs or gambling, to simply pride and ego, is fear. We become so afraid. And in the scriptures, also, it's implied that they became embarrassed and ashamed. And after they became embarrassed and ashamed, they started hiding the private parts in the icons, but we start hiding our hearts. So for me, that's a powerful thing in the scripture reading, because when we're in the stench in the tomb, and many of us are in these dark places, we feel like, well, that's the way I am. I have to endure this marriage. I don't know how to pick up this cross. I don't know how to walk out of the tomb. And we stay stuck, and we realize, well, how many times I hear confession, you know, Father, the same sin over and over, and I'm thinking, yeah, we can turn away, but we need to ask, what are you doing to get out of the tomb that you confess every
now, week? You mentioned 5 things, and I may have missed that. I got the first one, which is fear.
Let me tell you a powerful thing about fear. Fear, in a sense, the acronym for fear is false expectations appearing real. So here in the garden, God says, "Where are you?" And he's fueled with fear. Fear sets off the motion of a chain of events of the next 4 things. The next thing is he became embarrassed and ashamed. How many people want to do wrong things, pornography, stealing, lying? They're ashamed and embarrassed that they did that, so they have to keep that lie. And that's what the devil wants. It wants us to stay lying and in the dark. And then after the shame and embarrassment, the third thing that happens is it says they had to hide. They hid their private parts, but instead of our genitals, we hide things of our heart. God forbid if somebody really knows what's going on in my heart, because I'd be judged, and the shame and the fear is too much.
Okay.
The fourth thing that happens is we start lying. After we start lying, then we start blaming. You know, it's because I didn't have enough money, or because I had a rotten childhood. And as I started doing this work, fear and anxiety for me is basically 2 words, and depression is basically 2 words. And I see how we get stuck in the tomb.
So first is fear.
So fear, you go into shame and embarrassment.
Right.
And then what happens, the next thing that happens is you start hiding.
Hiding, that's
you don't
what
want to tell anyone. Oh, don't me less the pramata patini goyenya.
Don't say the things of the family.
Don't let
right.
anyone know. Because okay. God forbid if they know. And the people in our group, the ones that have done heroin, the time that they started the healing process is when they stopped hiding and they started telling people in the community the shame.
Okay, and then lying.
And then they start lying.
Blame.
And then they start blaming.
And then blaming. Wow. Very powerful, Father. Very powerful.
I think when you look at our kids, it's the same sequence. And I'm thinking, can we support people just to look at this process in any of those 5 places, slow down enough so we can back up
okay.
to the root of the fear, and then allow God to heal with his Bob?
Well, clearly the story is not just about Christ and Lazarus. It takes place within the context of a family, namely his sisters, Mary and Martha, within that larger community. So go a little bit further for us. What can we learn from that?
Well, what we can learn from that is we want to keep the secret. We want to say, no, just don't bother. The Lord knows. So how many times have we been called to help out? How many times have we been asked to be available for somebody, and we really don't know? We don't have the time, or we're not a therapist, or we're not a priest, and we quite don't know how. And I think just inviting the person to tell the story of the pain can be the beginning of healing. So in our families, what happens is we want to keep secrets. I know a family in one of the churches, in nearby churches, the person, the child is older, and the parents give them an allowance every month, and they're doing heroin.
Mm.
You think, oh, my God, don't talk about this in our church. And I can tell you that I'm getting calls more and more of the different addictions that go on in our church, and the person next to you, you wouldn't know it. Because we got to keep the lie, right? We got to stay in the tomb. We got to suffocate and just endure life because we're embarrassed to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. finally, Father Tom, what does this teach us about our own potential to be resurrected? Maybe not from a physical death, but a spiritual death or a sickness.
Well, all I know is God created you and me in his image, and anything less to live that way would be a shame. And I think the hard thing is we live in a mediocre kind of way. So I think what it teaches me about me is, and for me, is that the body's connected to the heart's connected to the mind's connected. We're all interwound. So if we keep any secrets as Lazarus did, as he was exposed by Jesus, the secret was he's dead. You're dead somehow, Father Chris, and I am dead somehow. Who loves you and me enough to carry you to Christ and carry me to Christ so we can get out of the tomb or roll away the stone that really keeps you from being fully awake and alive in Jesus Christ? So for me, what I realize is two things. For me, anxiety is as simple as two words, and depression is as simple as two words. If we don't respond to those with love, we're going to be dead in the tomb. I'll give you an example. Fear keeps us from being present. Fear and love cannot coexist. So anxiety, which most people you see in your parish and everyone, pretty much everyone's dealing with, there's so many sleeping pillows out there because we're so anxious we can't lay our head down in a peaceful pillow to rest. But it's the two words for anxiety is simply this: what if? What if I married the wrong person? What if I get cancer? What if everyone leaves my church? What if I'm not a good priest? What if I say the wrong thing? What if the world comes to an end? What if? And then what happens, we allow the what ifs to take off, fueled by the evil one and all its insidious responses to the what if. And depression is almost as simple as this. And all you psychologists out there, whoever's hearing this, forgive me, but I don't want to bash you on the DSM-5 that has all these qualifications of dissociative personality, but I think it's rooted in those five steps of what happened in the garden. And the what if and if then. You ever hear that, Father?
Mm-hmm.
Depression is all set up in if then. If I didn't get raped, then I would be like this. If I had a better parent, I would be better off. If I had more money, then. If I went to another school, then. If I didn't marry him, then I would be this. If I didn't marry her, then I'd... You know. So it's almost like we spend so much time in the future with anxiety with the what if question, or get stuck in the past in if then, and we can't live in the moment. We're all no different than, at least I'm no different than, somebody who's struggling with any addiction. The new definition for me for addiction is anything I do or you do repetitively against your will that gets you into trouble.
Mm, very good. Father Tom, great to have you on the program. Thanks
to be with you, Father Chris, and blessings to you on this holy week. And may we get out of the tombs that confine us and keep us from loving God.
Agreed, my friend. Thank you so much.